This is Radio Boston. I'm Evan Horowitz, marking the day when Charlie Baker's second term as governor officially begins. Often called the country's most popular governor, Baker was sworn in this afternoon, and he used that opportunity to reflect on the years behind and those ahead.
Thanks to the hard work of so many, I can say with complete confidence that the state of our Commonwealth is strong. Thank you.
Here with me to discuss the governor's words and his plans is WBUR's senior political reporter, Anthony Brooks. How are you doing, Anthony?
Hey, Evan. Well, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm doing pretty nice to see you in here.
Yeah, nice to be here.
Let's talk about the speech. What jumped out at you?
Well, you know, if you're looking for the sort of big, bold idea that would define Charlie Baker's second term, you might have come away from this speech disappointed. On the other hand, this was vintage Charlie Baker. It was a practical to-do list, not a big, bold vision thing list. He took credit for progress in his first term on things like the economy, more people working in Massachusetts than ever before, education spending up. He's fixing the T. The opioid crisis is still a crisis, but there are signs that fewer people are dying. And Baker makes the point that slow and steady wins the race. I want you to listen to something. Here's a bit of what he said.
I want you to think about the Commonwealth's leadership on national issues. We have the highest rate of health care coverage in the nation. But that story was written across 2 decades, 10 legislative sessions, 5 governors, and 4 presidents. We have best-in-the-nation gun laws, a story that was also written across multiple legislative sessions and several governors, and was almost always done on a bipartisan basis.
So, Evan, what I like about that is there's a kind of modesty there. You know, there isn't like this guy who's saying, I've got the big idea. I'm going to change, I'm going to rock your world. It's like slow and steady wins the race. And maybe the big idea is that there isn't a big idea beyond competence, working incrementally with a Democratic legislature and burnishing that image of an extremely competent, get down in the weeds governor who avoids deep ideological fights.
And I mean, it's interesting that you picked out that clip. It stood out to me, too, because it speaks not just to a kind of modesty, but to a kind of gradualism that makes some sense of his incrementalist approach. It's like, I'm part of this longer-term process of making the Commonwealth a better place, and I don't have to take credit for every little thing. I want to be part of a bigger thing. I mean, what are the bigger things? So looking ahead, what are the bigger things he wants to be part of?
Well, really more of the same. Steady as she goes, he talked about continuing progress on transportation, bringing healthcare costs down, the opioid crisis, as we mentioned, more but modest investments in education, redoubling his commitment to more housing in the state, and making a big commitment to clean energy, really building on some of the big things that he focused on his first during his first 4 years.
You believe it? That is, I mean, how you listen to it and you think it's how realistic do the plans sound?
Oh, I think they're realistic, maybe not fully fleshed out. For example, one thing stuck out to me. He talked about the need for more housing. He says we need to get this done, but how's he going to get it done? In his first term, he filed a bill that tried to spur more housing construction by giving local communities more flexibility with zoning. But it died in the legislature, and he said today we shouldn't let the perfect become the enemy of the good. So does this mean he's going to refile the same bill, or does he have something bigger and bolder in mind? It's not clear. On the other hand, State of the Union inaugural addresses, this was also a State of the Union address, aren't really designed to get too specific.
Well, it's not a policy speech.
Right.
He's giving a general
broad strokes for the state of the
Commonwealth.
So I have something. So he also spent a lot of time, as I mentioned, talking about his accomplishments in the first term, particularly when it comes to the economy. More people working in Massachusetts than ever before. And I have a clip here, Evan, that I want to play for you where he talked about something else. Here it is.
Massachusetts no longer has a structural budget deficit. With your help, we ended last year with a major budget surplus, deposited over $650 million into the stabilization fund, and anticipate making another major deposit to that fund at the end of this year.
Now, Evan, forgive me. I know you're the host, but you're the numbers guy. So I want to ask you about this question. He often takes credit, Charlie Baker does, for reducing or eliminating the structural budget deficit. He got a big hand in the legislature today, mostly from Democrats. What's he talking about?
So
and
I
what
have
do you
to
make
say first,
it?
Like, you have a real knack for picking out the clips that I want to talk about and want to hear again. I jumped out at me because, I mean, structural budget deficit is one of those things that who understands? The idea is, like, when the economy is so-so, does the state run a deficit or a surplus?
Right.
And when the economy's so-so, we should be close to neutral. What he's taking credit for just strikes me as slightly off.
Because?
Yeah. Because it's true that we did have a surplus, or we did seem to end the year with a surplus, but the economy's not so-so. It's really, really good. It's the best it's been in a long time, and he knows that. That's a big reason we ended with a surplus. We also had a major tax cut, corporate tax cut, which seems to have boosted tax revenues last year, which also played a part. So I don't think you can rightly claim or necessarily demonstrate that he has fixed the structural budget deficit, even though we had a good year.
And it raises the question, the issue of what happens if we have a few bad years.
Well, I think that's a big question. Don't you think that's a big question for
absolutely.
His legacy?
Yeah, really interesting. So another thing I want to mention about his speech, though, is it's striking, just what a bubble we live in Massachusetts. I mean, here we are living with a government shutdown, terrible political divisions in Washington, a chief executive who doesn't seem to really be interested in working with the opposition party. Yet in Massachusetts, we've got a Republican governor, deep blue Massachusetts, this great working relationship with a Democratic legislature. And Charlie Baker's tone stands in such contrast to that. Here's what he said toward the end of his speech.
Let others engage in the cheap shots and the low blows. Let's make our brand of politics positive and optimistic instead of cruel and dark. And instead of the bickering and the name-calling that dominates much of today's public debate, let's build on the work of those who came before us and make our work about how we can make this state better for the people who call this glorious place home.
So he didn't say the name Donald Trump. But,
but it's there, right?
It's there.
It's strewn through there.
And it's a really interesting sort of moment, when a guy like Charlie Baker stands out in such a striking contrast to someone like Trump and has created a political mood, I guess you could say, in the state that is so different than the one that dominates so much of this country right now.
Well, that's WBUR's senior political reporter, Anthony Brooks. Anthony, thanks so much for being here.
It's my pleasure.
But we're not done with the governor's speech. I want to dig into one of the issues that the governor mentioned, an issue I know is on a lot of listeners' minds, that is transportation. And that includes the roads, the T, the traffic, and the simple-sounding question of what we can do to make travel smoother and more environmentally sustainable. So joining us in studio to discuss is Jim Alesi, former transportation secretary, member of the Transit Matters Board, and the principal of TriMount Consulting. Jim, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me back, Evan.
Anytime. Also with us is Carolyn Ryan. She's Senior Vice President for Policy and Research at the Boston Chamber of Commerce. Welcome, Carolyn.
Thank you.
Well, so listeners, we also want you to join this conversation. How would you rate Governor Baker thus far on transportation? Well, what do you make of the work that's been done on the T and the streets? What do you think needs to be our top priority or his top priority to fix and improve in a second term? Give us a call, 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK, or tweet us at Radio Boston, and we'll get to your questions as soon as you call in. But let's start with the people actually in the room. Jim, before we talk about the future, how about the past, the first term? What's your sense for the governor's record, his accomplishments thus far when it comes to transportation?
I think he has some real accomplishments. I think his appointments, particularly to the MBTA's Fiscal Management and Control Board, have been...
Which he essentially created.
There are many people, myself included, who were skeptical about creating a new board, but his appointments have been outstanding. The work that that board has done has borne fruit. He's appointed a solid secretary. We don't always agree on everything, but his appointments, I think, have been both strong and important to rebuilding confidence. That's been a good thing. I think toward the end of this first term, we've seen some things happen that are really hopeful. The governor's embrace of a cap and invest program that will both reduce emissions and raise revenue for transportation. The governor's future transportation commission that really sets the table for a future of sustainable mobility.
So we're tripping from first term to second, because these are things but they're planning
correct
for future
and I think
implementation.
In terms of the first term, there were things that were done, I would say, to get the T back on track, some decisions that the Fiscal Management Control Board made, like spending another several hundred million dollars to complete all new red line trains by 2023. Good decisions. A lot wasn't done. A lot needs to be done. So we're sort of setting a grade for this. It's still incomplete. I think the complete grade comes at the end of the second term.
Carolyn, incomplete?
No. You know, I think I would give them a solid B, recognizing that a solid A would means we would have a world-class transportation system in the Commonwealth.
That's quite a curve you've established. Yeah. Okay.
But, you know, we don't have that, and I don't think anybody thinks we have that, especially when it comes to our public transit. But they've made a lot of good progress. And one of the important things this administration has done, and this the control board, is they've built back up or started to build back up the public trust and confidence in the system by addressing some of the more egregious operational issues and challenges and acknowledging the steep climb on the capital investments that we need, things like our signals and our systems. And they're very you know, unglamorous types of investments, but there are things that need to happen. So I think in terms of building up that trust and building up the political capital to hopefully do something going big going forward, I think they've done a good job.
So if you were the governor, Carolyn, and you had that, you built up that political capital for 4 years, and now you're planning to spend it, where do you spend it?
I think what is missing a little bit is a big, bold vision on transportation. That's what we'd like to see. That includes taking all of these different projects that we have out there floating around and figuring out which ones are going to move us ahead in terms of supporting economic growth. They might address some of our housing crisis. They take into account climate change and the effects of that. Figuring out how much all of those cost and whether we need revenues, and if we do, how much and what those look like. I think that's the next step that we'd like to see going into the next term.
Jim, you agree?
So let's think about what the most serious transportation problem is as we speak today.
What
is it? Congestion. Congestion is polluting our air. We're losing
congestion
money.
Congestion on the streets, congestion
in the
tunnels.
Urban core, congestion on the interstate highway system, congestion on local roads. We've got to deal with this issue, and it's different depending on where you are. The whole point of sustainable mobility is to get people access to key destinations conveniently and safely. That means jobs, healthcare, education, et cetera. We can decongest the system, but we've got to act. In the urban core, for example, East Boston is choking on traffic congestion because the explosion of Uber and Lyft cars into Logan is uncontrollable. We have to commit, I would ask the Baker administration to consider, connecting the red and the blue line so that people in Kendall Square don't need to take an Uber to the airport but can hop on a very easy transit connection. Number one, we can decongest the interstates if we commit to a regional rail vision that is an electrified inner city system with frequent all-day service. Now, the governor, to his credit, the secretary put together a regional rail visioning plan. I'm on the council. That report will be issued at the end of this year. But we need to commit the dollars to begin a transformation of what we call commuter rail to something that is truly frequent all-day electrified, speedier intercity rail.
So I want to say again that we're eager to hear your views on this. Listeners, just give us a call, 1-800-423-8255. And let's go to Steve from Marshfield. He's got a plan he likes. Steve, what do you recommend?
Yes, thanks for taking me a call. I'm calling in support of the North-South Station Rail Link. Instead of taking valuable urban land and using it to store and shunt passenger equipment, they ought to connect the two stations, as Governors Weld and Dukakis recommend, and have run-through systems so that people like me in Marshfield can take a job up in Salem and go straight through with a single seat ride. That also improves the connection from the Northeast Corridor with Amtrak to northeastern New England. And it would promote an all-electric system for both commuter rail as well as Amtrak.
Wow, Steve, thank you so much for coming. It sounds like Steve has really studied this issue and communicated with the former governors who have come out pretty vociferously in favor of this plan. Carolyn, what's your take on the North-South Rail Link? What does it mean? I mean, the idea, just so listeners know, a tunnel connecting North Station and South Station, so you can allow traffic to run across different parts of what is now a disconnected rail system.
Right. You know, it's a project, when you talk about just that project, makes a ton of sense. This gets back to my earlier point. We have a lot of projects, when you're only talking about that project, make a ton of sense. But somebody else said this: there's not enough money in the Commonwealth to pay for all of those projects, let alone what we actually have in terms of tax revenue and other revenues to spend on it. So we have to think about all of these relative to each other. And how does an investment in North-South Rail Link compare to an investment on a Blue Line, Red Line connector, on South Station expansion, all of these other things? Does it help us achieve overall economic and policy goals for the state and the city?
Well, does it?
I don't know. That's what we need.
So a study of the cost-benefit analysis of various operations. It's not just a matter of cost, right, Jim? There's a capacity issue, too. How many big projects can the MBTA or MassDOT oversee at any one time?
Well, as many as they have the resources for. I mean, the real issue, when people like me call for more net new revenue for the MBTA, it's to get them the resources to do more. When the Green Line extension was in trouble, the MBTA brought in resources from other places and paid them well to keep that project on track, no pun intended. So we need the resources to get, you know, the secretary issued a report to her credit that showed that connecting the red and the blue line was a lot less expensive than people thought. So there are resources are there to move in that direction. We have to, you know, we can't be stuck in this. We know the cost of everything and the value of nothing. The importance of mobility to keeping our economy going is critical. And so we need to find those resources, and we need to do better. Look, I just want the governor in his remarks today said we need to invest in the future of zero emission technology. That means things like electric vehicle infrastructure, et cetera. I'm all for it. Today's paper tells us that the city and the state can't even figure out how to paint, who's going to pay for the paint on dedicated bus lanes. Well, let me just say to everyone listening, if we can't figure that out, we're never going to get out of our own way to get to a zero-emission transportation system. We've got to do better.
Well, in his speech today, the governor did say that there are big plans to spend billions of dollars on infrastructure. Let's listen to that.
Over the course of the next 5 years, the T plans to spend over $8 billion on infrastructure, much of which will be invested in its core system. This is more than twice what has ever been spent by the T in any five-year period of time. Now, this will be no small task.
Well, now, that's quite a claim. More than, has that twice as much as has ever been spent? Carolyn, what do you make of this claim? Are we really spending at unprecedented levels?
You know, I think that $8 billion includes some of the investments in the Orange and Red Line car upgrades. It includes some of the Green Line expansion. So those are major projects. We haven't had new Orange and Red Line cars in decades. So yes, those are significant investments that we need in the core system. I think some of what I would focus in on that is it's the core system, and we certainly need that running well. But Boston is also, the population's increased. We've grown as a city, and is the core system adequate to meet our needs? And based on our congestion issues, I don't know if that's true anymore.
We have another suggestion from George in Newburyport. George, what do you think should be a top priority for fixing transit?
Well, I really do appreciate the comments that the gentlemen have been making about the connecting north-south, et cetera. But what I would say to summarize, or the point I would make, is that we should not fail to make some smaller changes that would make a big psychological impact at the same time. Things like connecting the T subway line with the commuter rail in Revere, you know, that they tracks run right beside each other. People for a long time have said that would be a great way to get to the airport from the North Shore. And no one seems to be touching that. Similarly, the commuter bus has real nice park and rides, but the train commuter rail, you have to pay $4 a day for parking, which adds up. So these small things. I would just make those suggestions. Let's look for those.
It's a great point, George. Focus on the small things. And you're not the only one with this idea. Marjorie from Watertown has a similar thought on, you know, making the small things big things. Marjorie, what was your idea?
My idea is that we should have better signage in our area. You can go down the street and there's no sign telling you what street you're on. You can go down the street and suddenly find you're in a left turn lane or a right turn lane. People respond to that by poking along. I think if they had a better idea of where they were and what lane to be in, it would help a lot. It certainly is not going to solve all the problems. But
sometimes little things add up. Thank you so much, Marjorie. Jim, so what do you make of the broader idea that a lot of little things could make a difference?
I think it's an important idea. Transit Matters, you know, serve on their board. We believe in lower cost, higher impact solutions. You know, when I was Secretary of Transportation, we inaugurated the Silver Line 4 service for $1.7 million to replace a projected $2.1 billion subway tunnel that wasn't feasible. So, yes, those of us who call for net new revenue and more resources are not asking or calling for profligate spending.
We don't want profligate spending.
Let me make that clear.
All right.
We are asking for levels of investment that match our need. Metro Boston, which is basically the MBTA service area, produces 84% of the state's gross domestic product. We need the transit system that supports that economy and that GDP has to function better than it has been functioning. And so when the governor says today, you know, $8 billion over 5 years, that's $1.6 billion a year. And as Carolyn points out, that includes new red line, new orange line, new green line extension. When you pull all that out, not that that's unimportant, but when you pull it out, not really a lot of investment going into what we all believe needs to happen. And so we support the future commission vision and the governor's belief, as he said, that he needs to step up investment in public transportation. But, you know, it's like King Claudius in Hamlet. My words rise up and my thoughts lie below. Words without action are just words. And so what we need to do is support the governor, the legislature, to raise the net new revenue that needs to be raised. And one last thing I want to say, we need to empower cities and towns. And I'm looking forward to the legislature handing the governor a regional ballot initiative act to sign into law this year that will bring true regional equity into Massachusetts, allowing cities and towns to put ballot questions before the voters to raise local fees or taxes to support local infrastructure needs. We need other places do this very successfully. We need to begin to do that in Massachusetts, both to support regional equity and to get new revenue in to support the kind of investment that we know we need.
Yeah. And in the meantime, while we're talking about investing for the future and future plans, there's this turnover in management at the MBTA, right? We had GM in place for 15 months, suddenly gone. We have Steve Poftak taking over. What do you make of this? Carolyn, is this a sign of disarray? Is it an improvement? What happened?
You know, I don't know for sure what happened. It's certainly a tough job, and that could be part of it. I think having Steve Poftak in there, somebody who knows what he's getting into pretty clearly.
Steve's been on the control board.
He's been on the control board, yes. He's been in the area for a long time. You know, that was some of what we heard with the most recent departure. That could be helpful to this, but I think that's an important point, is the disruption in leadership creates a bit of instability for the however many thousands of people are working at the T, and they do need that level of stability, particularly when they're coming under increased scrutiny over the last few years in terms of its operations being a priority for the governor.
Yeah, and also, right, because the governor has made effective bureaucratic control, operational reform at the agency such a top priority to see this change at the top. Did it surprise you, Jim? Did you see
no,
it coming?
Yes, it did not surprise me.
You did see it coming.
We all know, many of us in this arena know Steve Pavtak. He's going to be, I believe, a strong and stable leader at the T. I'm hoping that Steve raises his comfort level about looking at net new revenue and pushing the envelope. The T needs to innovate, and you need to take risk when you innovate, and the leader of the organization needs to let everyone know that if they do take reasonable risk and innovate, that he's got their back.
Now, just to switch from transit to the roads, you mentioned this already, Jim, but there is talk now of a kind of cap and trade system for car emissions.
Cap and invest, correct.
Okay, cap and invest system for car emissions. This is going to happen over the next year? That is, there would be some kind of tax, equivalent to a tax on emissions, where there's a limit to what you can emit. And what is your sense for this plan? Is it going to happen? Is it a good idea?
I think it's going to happen. I think the governors are pretty much in line. And I think with the inauguration of Janet Mills in Maine yesterday, even more governors will join in. On this RGGI for transportation. It's been happening in California and elsewhere where we're basically putting a cost on carbon emissions. We're saying to the wholesaler, you pay a fee based on a certain formula.
That is, we already do this at power plants.
We already do this at power plants. We know that in that context, it worked quite successfully. In this context, it's designed really... it will raise the price of gasoline. There's no question about that.
Which is part of the
point. Of the point. Well, and it's going to raise net new revenue for Massachusetts. But it's also going, I think, to reduce people's use of vehicles and reduce emissions. So it's designed to do both.
Well, Carolyn.
Well, part of the pushback you'll hear from the business community and others when we talk not just about this as a form of new revenue, but any new revenue, is we have to know how it's going to be spent first.
I agree with that.
And that's why I talked earlier about this list and knowing what our priority projects are. I think there's a lot of discomfort with an idea of just sort of giving a blank revenue source and not having a clear vision for what we're going to get for
that. But you think the business, I mean, from what you hear as, you know, working in the chamber, there might be an appetite for increasing revenue through a tax or system like that if it were earmarked in some way towards transportation.
More, I think it would have to be more than earmarked. It couldn't just say it's going to go into a transportation fund.
Oh, wow. Even more concrete than that.
Yeah. You know, listen, businesses understand what a major problem is transportation is in our region. Their employees can't get to work. They can't get home easily. Nobody wants that. They understand the need for investment. But... again, they don't want just a blank check written, even if it is earmarked specifically for transportation. That's, I don't think, adequate. I think there needs to be more specifics around it and something that takes into account statewide equity. So it can't, as much as we'd like it to just be maybe a Boston investment.
It has to be sensitive to the fact that not everybody lives in Boston or Greater Boston.
Right.
Well, that's Carolyn Ryan, Senior Vice President for Policy and Research at the Boston Chamber of Commerce. Thank you, Carolyn.
Thank you.
And also with us was Jim Aloisi, former Transportation Secretary, member of the Transit Matters Board, principal of TriMount Consulting. I could go on, but I'll just thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Evan.
stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Evan Horowitz. This is Radio Boston.